Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today's program is, I guess we could call it all Irish, even though our first guest, Barbara Lynch, although she is, Lynch is Irish, and she comes from Boston, and but she cooks Italian. Go figure. But anyhow, she's one of my most favorite chefs and a really interesting woman, so let's hear it for her new memoir called Out of Line.
Spit it out, dude. Spit it out. It might be a gold watch.
Yes. Actually, Barbara Lynch is like one of my favorite people. She has the kind of gumption and balls that I really admire in a woman, and she's an incredible chef. Barbara, your book here is, it was fascinating to read. You also got this page turner style to it. Are you a natural writer like Gabrielle Hamilton is also a writer?
No, I wouldn't even compare myself to, she's a brilliant writer.
She is a brilliant writer.
I'm not. What I am is a person who kept a lot of journals and wrote a lot just for me in general to sort of take a look at myself every 5 years to see where I am and how I've progressed. So, I mean, honestly, even as a kid, I've journaled since, I think, age 7.
Wow. It's just it's such discipline. But you are a disciplined person, right?
I try. I mean, I am. I think I'm hardest on myself. And I didn't have a lot of discipline growing up. So there's that discipline, that side of me that I have to force myself to be disciplined. And I think by writing, you know, like I said, by keeping a journal, it kind of keeps you on track of where you are and what you've done and where you want to be.
The title of your book is Out of Line, and subtitled A Life of Playing with Fire. Uh-huh. So people could surmise that you are a successful chef, I would think. I preferred the other title, Canals of Steel.
Well, you can say that word, right? Canals of Steel.
So that was the issue. Nobody could say
that. That was the issue. It's like, oh, we're in America. Canals is going to be hard. But I'm like, oh. But when you have to go to Au Bon Pan, you have to say, I don't know, like Au Bon Pan, right? Or a Venti. Gradually, they'd get it, but I don't think that worked for the publishing company. So,
I loved that, but anyhow.
See, the publishers, they were the problem.
They're the problem.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to give in. Out of Line is actually one of the, it's even better, quite frankly, because there is a stage in the book where you find yourself as a floater in terms of leaving the line. You know, that's what you know how to do, right? That's, you know how to cook. And then there's this learning process of being able to be the leader and the delegator and the inspirer. And that's a challenge. So, and then there's the me, the personal side of me that seems to lack a filter sometimes.
I'm also filterless, so I understand.
Okay, so that, and the fire to me is different from fire, what you think. Fire for me is warmth and nurturing, and it's heat for sure, but it's more of a warmthness to not, and it's okay to take that, it's okay to face the fire, you know what I mean?
Yes. Now, why is it, I mean, I know why, because I've read the book, but tell our listeners what is so sort of astounding for how you've progressed. What is your empire right now? Can you just riff through all those, the parts of Barbara Lynch Grupo?
7 restaurants, so number 9 was the first one. It's almost 20 years old now.
Oh, geez.
And that's located right across from the State House on Park Street. And then there's B&G Butcher Shop and Stir, the demonstration kitchen. And that's on one corner in the south end of Boston. And then across town, sort of like in front of the waterfront, is Sportello Drink in Montan.
Right.
And they're all different.
Yes, they are. Everybody's sort of marveling at the fact that you came out of a really rough environment and somehow got yourself structured. There was so much to your learning curve besides just learning how to cook.
Right.
Tell us about some of that you talk about in the book.
This is where the book is the most inspiring, is that kid growing up in a housing project or from a more humble upbringing, per se, is without an education or a, you know, financial background or a culinary education or a high school education for that matter. The story tells, like, how did she do it? There's really no answer how I did it except for being very tenacious, I guess, and a curious kid and ballsy, as you say, I guess, and taking a risk. I mean, what did I have to lose, really? Nothing except, you know, a reputation, and I certainly wasn't going to lose that as being, like, I think as a kid I always wanted to be, like, different, or not different, but I just didn't follow it. I wasn't a follow-the-leader kind of person, and, you know, produced restaurants that I was familiar with or what I knew I could handle, so. And also, they're all in Boston, and they're kind of what a city needed. What my city needed, I felt like.
In the book, there was one area that I was consistently envious of you, and that is the staunch friends you made and kept over the years. You had a culture in South Boston that stayed with you, right?
I mean, I still have that culture, yeah. The culture's still there, yeah.
That's, I mean, it's remarkable. I don't know that many people who have that. But
right.
You had some real tests. As far as I could tell, working for Todd English must have been a real test.
You know, yeah, but again, he was like 23 when he was at Michaela's in Cambridge. So a young, talented chef, national acclaim, was, I would say that's a lot of stress on someone, right?
Yeah.
But first chefs to, you know, have live wood fire and to really bring visit Italy, mostly to Boston / Cambridge, where you had Julia Child before. Most of the cuisine was French, right? So, you know, Italian, I mean, he was killing it. And he was she was very successful in such an obscure area.
Uh-huh.
Well, amazing what she pulled off.
Yeah, I mean, I knew him when he was young. He was still married to his first wife.
Right, Olivia.
Yeah, whatever happened to Olivia?
Olivia is doing great. She's remarried to somebody from Brookline, Massachusetts.
Oh, great.
And that's about it. That's all I know.
Yeah, yeah. I used to work with her and Women Chefs and Restaurateurs in our early days.
Right. She's a very outgoing personality.
Right.
She's great.
See, part of this, I'm alluding to these characters in your book, because people who are in the sphere, the culinary world, know all these characters. So it's really, I mean, I just found it fascinating to get your take on all of them.
What you think? On all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought about how, I was at the Beard Awards when you served your signature that year. So
the butter soup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think that it was good to get your perspective, because yours was more behind the scenes than mine was even.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, my chef's friends all thought I was crazy. They're like, what the fuck? Butter soup? Well, what's wrong with butter soup? You know, I mean, it is May, and they wanted female chefs and farmers, and this is my farmer, and everybody knows what butter is and milk and honey, and that makes you feel good. So shellfish from New England and butter is good. And I'll never forget watching Joelle Robuchon's chef just drink the soup like it was going out of style.
Uh-huh.
And Gabrielle Hamilton was drinking. I'm like, Gabe, your hips are going to grow bigger overnight. You might want to lay off.
Yeah, well, of course, Joelle Robuchon, his famous mashed potatoes are half butter.
Half butter, half cream.
Yeah.
Full parts butter, cream, and potatoes, right?
Right. And I know
that just goes to show you how sweet that butter was, right?
Uh-huh.
That's so good. Mm.
And I never thought of, like, the French chefs, how that would be challenging somebody from South Boston.
Well, that was hard. I mean, you know, that's enough to take years off your life, because your insecurities just could take over if you let it, but then I just, my mind, I'm just like them. I can do this, you know. You got to talk yourself into it, basically, mm-hmm. and say, I can do it. I can do it. And I did. I did it.
You sure did, Barbara Lynch. And I'll tell you, I don't know where the guts came from, really. I mean, you just flew out and weren't even sure you were going to land any place with the net.
Right. No, I know. I know. And I hope I'm still like that, a bird that just keeps on flying and landing and growing and inspiring. I mean, that's, I kind of love doing that. And I like pushing the envelope as well. I have a purpose in life, and, uh-huh. and I think this is a good purpose to have.
You know, when I read that you were only one of two females that got a restaurateur, outstanding restaurateur award from Beards, I was shocked.
Yeah, I had no idea either. I had no idea. So I'm kind of happy I didn't know that.
Uh-huh.
And when I received that award, I was kind of like, holy shit. I didn't think of it that way, really. I just was really happy just to get the Best Restaurateur Award. Because it's a lot of work and a lot of hard work, and it pays off, you know, if you keep it going and don't give up.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about the book that might be misleading is you make it all sound too easy.
Oh, my God. Really? Well, then I'll have to write another one.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So is the chef group in Boston close-knit still?
Yeah, very close. We're, you know, it's funny because I consider them family, and they consider me family. So I'm just as humble as they are. I'm a human being. I'm not like this, you know, chef who sits in an office. I mean, I'm in the trenches with them. I can clean out grease trap like nobody's business, and so can't they. And mm-hmm. I think it's really important that I know these restaurants better than anyone, and I've worked every station, so that you know that if there's problems growing, then you know where to take them, and you know how to, you know, give them the tools to succeed. And And they know that I'm that type of person, and I'm very approachable, and they have my cell phone number if they feel like they're not being heard. I mean, that was always a trigger for me. I don't know if you realize that in the book, but being heard, you're like, what the, am I speaking a different language? Which, you know, yeah, clearly I wasn't. And so you got to weed that out. You got to weed those people out that aren't listening to you, the leader, the visionary.
The thing that also you were very fortunate in was having a mentor. I think that's one of the most critical issues in for women in any profession, and most assuredly in this male-dominated chefing.
Yeah, that's a hot topic right now. I mean, female chefs, mentors. I mean, not everybody, you know, had a mentor. I mean, mine were mentors, basically because I feel like I grew up alone, without like the discipline or the parents, or without a father. But so I looked towards Mario Bonello as a mentor. I looked towards my high school teacher as a mentor, just to, you know, all I needed was somebody to tell me, oh God, you can do it. Like, don't be afraid. I hope, you know, I want to see you be a chef, and I want to see you own a restaurant. That's all I need to hear. And to this day, I still need to hear sometimes, like, you think we can do this? You know, that word no is always, for me, was always a sign to say, go, do it. When somebody tells you no, it's like, okay, that's a negative person. That person has no optimism whatsoever. And so plow through it.
Now, I think it's interesting that you're really close friends with Gabrielle Hamilton. I mean, she's never wanted to venture past one restaurant, has she?
No, but I think that, God, I'm so proud of her because she does what she wants. Right. And, you know, I think her career was to be a writer,
she
not
is,
to be a restaurant owner,
I
right?
I can see that,
so,
yeah.
I took the other route. I mean, she always thought I was crazy. How the, you know, why are you opening so many restaurants? Blah, blah, blah. Cooking to me is natural. It was natural for me. I didn't struggle cooking. you know, I might struggle really learning business or really believing in myself about being a leader in this industry or being a leader in my own company. You can overcome that for sure. But you can't pretend you're a cook or you can cook. You got to love to cook, honestly, to do what I've done.
Uh-huh.
So you got to love to do whatever you're going to land and whatever you're going to do. You want to be able to be passionate about it and love it.
How did it turn out with your daughter? I was not crazy about the name either, Marquesa.
Oh, yeah. It's a tongue twister, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know what kind of a name it is.
It's Italian, yeah. And she was named, really, so, you know, my husband's like, 26 years older, so I didn't get that test done about, you know, to know if I was going to have a boy or a girl, or if she was going to have any Down syndrome or whatever. So I was just like, I'll take whatever God gives me. And when I had a girl, I mean, my first memory that popped in was this little girl, this painting I saw at the Frick Museum in New York City. It was the Marquesa in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens to be one of my favorite chefs as well, Guillermo Marchese, up in Franciacorta, northern Italy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he was a huge inspiration for me. When I dined there, I was just blown away by his Italian food. Yeah, like,
I don't know
so
if we've
simple.
Ever eaten there. Have we ever eaten there, Robert?
I don't know where it is, though.
In Franciacorta.
Yeah, north of Milan. I mean...
Yeah, we've been in that region, but we actually stayed at the premises of a guy who made Franciacorta sparkling wine.
Yeah, that area is beautiful up near Lake Como. Yeah.
Yeah.
You two need to get some sugar daddies to bring you up there, huh?
Yeah, we do. George Clooney's spoken for already, though. So.
He's right.
Oh yeah, right. George Clooney. I know, right?
Right. So, but your husband is that much older than you, but you were fortunate to have his full support as well, right?
Absolutely. It was a blessing in a way because, you know, I felt total loyalty from him in terms of being able to plan away at my career and knowing that I could come home and there was a security there for me.
Yep. That's good. Yeah. All good, yeah. So
yeah.
What's in the future, Barbara Lynch?
The future? Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Maybe book number two will be about what I'm going to do next in terms of restaurants. I'm not sure I want to have another brick-and-mortar restaurant because I kind of have everything I want and what I wanted in that end.
Yeah.
It would be like creating another opera, right?
Yeah.
So the other options are to kind of work more from the land in a way, like understand the ecosystems a little bit more. Not like foraging, not like nomad, but just really going back to the basics of American cookery in a way, or cookery in general.
Uh-huh.
And going back to really the basics of cooking and ease and, I don't know, maybe... this is going to sound funny, but kind of off the grid, but not off the grid.
Uh-huh. Well, people do. Chefs do that from time to time.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I want to make my own pottery. I want to ferment things in the ground and barrels. I want to make my own tinctures. I just moved up to Annisquam, where I have a lot of land and a lot of opportunity up here to just, you know, build my own root cellar and build a distillery if I wanted to, or do whatever I want.
But that sounds great. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, I'm kind of lucky. Yeah.
Well, that just sounds like another book. That's true. But I still would like to recommend this one because you get the background of all of this. You get the sense of the real spirit of this woman who's so determined from an early age. And you also get to play around with all the characters that are part of this moving scene called the culinary world. And all in all, I mean, there is a storyline so that you follow a plot and keep turning the pages. So I read it right straight through, and I have to admit I don't do that with all books that come across my desk.
Well, that's good to hear, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's almost like, oh, I didn't want it to end. I'm hoping you would say, oh, I don't want it to end, but it ends, and then hopefully there's another one coming out.
That sounds great to me. So
awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess we last interviewed you about your first cookbook, and this was a whole other dimension about who you are as a person, and
right.
I really hope you have a lot of success with this one.
So, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, you wouldn't happen to be going to Australia, would you?
No, but I I've never been to Australia, so I would love to go someday, yeah.
Yeah, because that's where the 50 best is this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No.
Do you go to the Beards in Chicago?
I haven't been to the one in Chicago yet. Unfortunately, I've been, like, I think last year I was in Milan for the Beard Milan Food Festival.
Oh, right.
But I want to be, so hopefully this year.
Oh, well, maybe we can touch base then in Chicago. That would be great.
That'd be wonderful.
Barbara Lynch, the book is Out of Line, A Life of Playing with Fire, and I really admire you enormously and always have. Thank you.
I adore you both. Thanks so much for wanting to talk to me about it. I'm glad you read it, and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Barbara.
All right. Have a great day. All right. Bye-bye.
And don't you go away, because we'll be right back with another exciting track.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and we can guarantee that our next guest is definitely Irish, Catherine Bruton, and she has a subject that everybody's sort of thinking about as we're approaching bathing suit weather, which is actually pretty far away at this point. I don't know why. I guess it just got too warm. It's skinny soups. How about something, everything, delicious, totally delicious, 80 flavor-packed recipes, and each one of them less than 300 calories. Let's listen to Catherine. Catherine Bruton, you have a really entrancing title for your book, Skinny Soups. You're indicating that it's not the soups that are skinny, but that they're all under 300 calories per. And if you make a point of eating these soups, then you will be skinny. True?
Well, it's not so much that you will be skinny if you eat them. It's more to offer people a calorie-controlled meal option. And if you want to do it for, if you want to eat these kind of soups for being healthy or to aid weight loss, it will tick both boxes. They're called skinny soups because essentially they are. But it's not to, it's more kind of to give people a calorie-controlled meal option that's really tasty, really healthy, and really delicious. And that just so happens to be soup in this particular book.
Now, but tell me this. You say under 300 calories per portion. What exactly is a proportion? You have things like serves two, serves four. But what is the quantity? Could you do that specifically?
The quantity is generally, I mean, when I have a bowl of soup, it tends to be quite a substantial bowl, like, you know, same as like a cereal bowl, I guess. And the quantities are designed to fill that bowl, more so in the savory ones. In the sweet ones, they're slightly less. And when I did the quantities, I wanted to make sure that one quantity would be filling and substantial, so that once you'd finished your bowl of soup, you felt satisfied by it. And not that you were still hungry and still looking for more.
So you'd had your dinner or your lunch, whatever it was.
Exactly, or breakfast. So that it's enough to fill you up and to make you feel satisfied. It was really important to me that the fact that it was a low-calorie meal didn't mean that it left you wanting or feeling like you needed more, that it was satisfying in itself. So when I designed all the recipes and kind of tested them and made them and ate them, I always ask myself the question, is that enough for that meal? Is it enough for dinner? Is it enough for lunch? Is it enough for breakfast? Do I feel satisfied? And if the answer was yes, then that got a tick. That made it into the book. Now, so that's what I tried to do.
You have quite a number of rather unusual ingredients, deriving perhaps from your travels in the Far East.
Yes.
I don't know how many people absolutely have gochujang or whatever it's called. We do. We happen to. But I mean, does your average reader have that Korean condiment in the fridge?
Well, I suppose, that's a very good question and a very relevant question. And not everybody will. And I suppose because I'm surrounded by all of these ingredients, the temptation is, and I cook with them all the time, to write with them and design recipes with them. But I think throughout the book, I've tried to make suggestions for what you might be able to use if you can't get that specific ingredient. And then there are some recipes where if, sadly, you can't get that ingredient or it's not available to you, that it's maybe not worth trying to substitute something else. But one of the things I do say in the book is that online, like the internet, is an amazing thing because even though you might not have a specific ingredient at your hand in a local shop or supermarket, it's more than likely going to be available online. And it's something that I've started using over the last few years quite a lot because I like to use lots of different ingredients and experiment with them. And whenever something's not available to me, I'll check online and see if I can find it. And
that's one of the things I liked a lot about your recipes. They're not rehashing your typical old soups. They're really creative. And in fact, I'd be tempted to try some just to see if they actually work because they seem not really quite on. I mean, who would believe you put some of these ingredients together?
I know. And some of them, there's one of them called a hangover soup. It has marmite in it.
I wouldn't stand up for that one. I mean, Peter loves marmite. I think it's disgusting.
I know. And you know
the
what?
The only thing worse is Vegemite.
I don't absolutely love it either. But with just there's something, a tiny teaspoon of it in that soup, it just gives it this amazingly salty, meaty flavor. It doesn't taste like Marmite at all. It just kind of transforms the flavor of the broth, which I found really interesting. And I'm not its biggest fan either, but I thought I'm going to use that because that's actually really interesting what it does. And what I wanted to do when we started talking about doing a soup book, I didn't want to have your kind of typical soups in there because the recipes for those are everywhere. You can find them all over. I wanted to kind of show how versatile soup can be and how different it can be and how it can be very imaginative and unusual and something really different. Because I think especially if you're having a calorie-controlled diet or meal, I think it's really important that it's really interesting and really tasty and satisfying. So I wanted the soups to feel like they were different and to feel like they were all a bit special. And like exactly what you said, I suppose to challenge what people think you could do with a soup.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of make them.
Some of them are just amazing. Tell me just why you brought up this hangover soup. Just to give an idea of the range of your recipes, why don't you run through the complete list of ingredients for that soup?
Now, let me think. Off the top of my head, it has mushrooms, haricot beans, tomatoes, onions. It has Worcester sauce or Worcester sauce, which is quite a beefy kind of flavor.
Uh-huh.
It has marmite, parsley, and stock.
So that's quite a combination. That would get you
it's
going.
Quite,
now you know,
it's quite a combination.
Now you
and
know.
A really nice thing. Sorry, go on.
You know the secret ingredient in Leon Perrin's Worcestershire sauce, right?
Is it anchovies?
Anchovies, yeah. I think if 50% of the people who put it on their food knew what was in it, they probably wouldn't eat it.
That's for sure.
Definitely. I totally
but you know, you listed
that.
One of my most favorite soups. We have a local restaurant here that does kimchi soup. It's fabulous.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It is fabulous. And so easy to make. It's amazing.
Uh-huh. If you're not making your own kimchi.
Well, the same chef makes.
Yeah, exactly.
The same chef makes sauerkraut soup,
yeah, he
too,
does,
right?
Yes.
fantastic. And the flavor of kimchi is so amazing. It doesn't need much else doing to it. And with the one in the book, the egg yolks that just kind of get swirled through it, it just creates the most amazing richness in that soup. That's definitely a soup that would feel like a meal in a bowl, as is the hangover soup. You feel it's very substantial. Because lots of soup as well, I think, is kind of a bowl of, like, something pureed. So it's a smooth, you know, kind of puree, essentially. Uh-huh. And whereas I love those kind of soups, the soups that I prefer are actually soups that are full of texture. Uh-huh. Because it's more interesting, because every spoonful is slightly different, and I think by the time you get to the end of it, you feel like you've had a meal. Whereas sometimes when I have a bowl of smooth soup, I don't necessarily feel quite as satisfied.
Yeah, so you'll like broth, the smooth broth, yeah.
Yeah, so that with smooth soup, I'll have to have something textured in there, like a textured topping, like sweet potatoes and pomegranate seeds with peanuts.
Well, I was just looking at this. You're just talking about this one now. You talk about a conglomerate of ingredients. It's sweet potato, sumac, and pomegranate with roasted peanuts, cilantro, and lime.
Yes.
Now, you dreamed that up, huh?
Yeah. Where did that one come from? I get ideas. I'm constantly my head in books and magazines and watching things on television, and I might see a flavor combination somewhere and think that might be really nice here with that, and it kind of all evolves and kind of happens. So I can never really remember exactly where I got all my ideas from, because they come from so many different places, and then lots of times it's just a collection of ingredients that I really love that in my head I think are going to go really nicely together. And most of the time, or lots of the time, I'll test an idea and I think that works in my head, but it doesn't work in real life. But then you have the really kind of lovely ones that do work, and that was one of them. And that was because I love sweet potato soup, but I always feel like it needs something more because the sweetness is too much for me.
Yeah, I don't like it. I found something, because frequently in airports you get sweet squash or sweet potato soups, and what was it I started putting in them to get them?
I don't remember. I don't watch you. What you do now? I have a more fundamental question, Kath. What do you actually do for a living? Are you a chef, or are you a would be chef, or a wannabe, or do you work on the London Stock Exchange? What do you actually do on any given day?
I'm a food stylist.
Okay,
so
got it.
I work on kind of presenting food for photography, I guess is the best way to describe it, and mostly on cookbooks. And then I do some editorial, and I do some food writing as well. So I write a few features for a few different magazines over here that I do kind of on a monthly or bi-monthly basis. Mm. And lots of people will get in touch with me to write different kinds of recipes for different things. So it's mainly writing, food writing, and food styling.
And you live in London, in the city of London proper?
Yeah, I live in East London with my husband and my little daughter, who's a year and 9 months old.
Oh, that's a cute age for food.
It is, yeah.
we were just at a restaurant called Lyle's, which is in Shoreditch.
Yeah, amazing restaurant.
Which is really fun, and that area of London, the restaurant scene seems to be booming.
It is. It really is, and very interesting things opening all the time. It's got a real kind of melting pot of different kinds of restaurants.
Yeah, and you meet so many interesting people. That's the place where the Swedish couple was sitting next to us.
That's right. That was the Lyles.
Yeah.
Our best meal, and I think two of the best meals we've had in the last 5 years or so, were both at Sushi Samba.
Oh, yeah, we love Sushi Samba.
Where the chef
is. Yeah, Sushi Samba is amazing.
The chef is so incredibly creative.
Oh, he's wonderful, yeah. You could listen to these, you know, if you go on our website and go into audio archives. You can listen.
Yeah,
to
I've been having a little look through your website. You guys have had the most amazing travels and met the most amazing people.
Yes. Now, here's another reason I knew you were Irish. Because of all the soda bread recipes.
Yes. Yes.
And I want somebody to make me this pumpkin seed and prune rye soda bread. It sounds so delicious.
It's really good. I'm obsessed with soda bread. I feel like more people should know about it and more people need to cook it because it's just the easiest thing in the world to do.
And we're obsessed with it.
The most amazing results. I mean, it's, you know, no one ever believes me when I tell them how simple it is and how amazing it is.
I can remember sitting in at the chef's table in a Dublin restaurant called Chapter One.
Oh, yeah,
and wolfing down three or four different kinds of soda bread.
It's kind of once you pop, you can't stop. It's that kind of, once you have one slice, you need another. And especially when you have it in Ireland and you have, you know, the proper Kerrygold butter, you know, kind of layered all over it.
Kerrygold is kind of top-notch butter, right?
It's bread with your butter rather than butter with your bread. You know, I always have a layer as thick as cheese on it. But that's a great... That's a great little recipe.
The other thing that I'd like is your idea and your recipes for pastes. So you can just make those and then stir them into all these other soups and punch up the flavors.
Yeah, and one of my favorite ones is the shellfish bisque, the turmeric shellfish bisque.
Yeah, we're in love with turmeric. We get the fresh roots.
Yeah, we get that here as well. I'm quite spoiled around here with the shops that we have. You can get all of those kinds of things. That's a very decadent soup when you make it, but it's actually very, very easy to put together. And that paste just stirred through some stock is just amazing. And you flavor it with, you use the prawn head to kind of give it that real lovely bisque flavor. So you get the real fishy flavor in it as well. And it's delicious, but I kind of wanted to give people recipes that would make things easier for them. So, you know, give them options like making a paste and putting it in the freezer and having the idea of stirring that through stock to give you this amazingly flavored soup, and just to make it all a bit easier rather than recipes that are kind of very long-winded and very difficult.
Everybody seems to have a section on superfoods, and so you have your superfood soup section.
Mm-hmm.
The thing nobody tells me is, To get this wonderful superfood effect, how much of it do you have to eat?
I think the superfood chapter for me is more, I suppose superfood is probably the name of it. It's right insofar as I think food is so, it can be so good for you. So like the route I was going down with that chapter was a collection of ingredients that are known to be particularly good for you, that are kind of brought together in a soup. But if you're talking about superfood from a superfood perspective, I think the answer to that question is, it's a very difficult one to answer because no one seems to be able to.
Right.
I think the term superfood is probably a trend as much as it is a fact. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm never sure how many goji berries do you need to eat to get the benefit from them? How many, you know, avocados do you need to get the benefit that they say that you get from them? I'm not sure is the answer to that question.
Yeah.
But within that chapter, what I wanted to do was just, I suppose, focus on ingredients that are known to be particularly good for you, like avocados and those kinds of ingredients, and bring them together in one bowl that kind of becomes a bowl of something that's particularly nutritious and particularly good for you.
Right.
So it's like a real hit of nutrition.
Well, anyone who wants creative, expansive soups should get this book called Skinny Soups. The author, Catherine Bruton, and it's 80 flavor-packed recipes of less than 300 calories, so you also have calorie control. And Catherine, it's good to talk to you, but I'm going to go and drink a lot now so that I can have your hangover soup.
Well, I hope you enjoy both as much as one another.
That's a clever excuse.
Yeah, I must say, you have just fantastic imagination for combining flavors and ingredients, and I'm going to test them all out.
Thank you so much. That is such a lovely thing to say and so lovely to hear. I really appreciate that.
Great, and good talking to you, and hope to talk to you again for your
next. It's been lovely talking to you both, and thank you so much for having me on the show.
Right, Catherine. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station. www.aspstation.net.
Well, we've been there, that is, seated at the New Irish Table, and that is the title of this book from Leslie Conran Carolla. It's the New Irish Table, Recipes from Ireland's Top Chefs. And it was like visiting our old friends because we know many of these chefs and have eaten in their restaurants in Ireland. And it's a great subject. Well, we're going to be talking with Leslie Conran Carolla about one of my favorite topics, the New Irish Table. And in her book by that title, she has listed recipes from Ireland's top chefs. Many of them are chefs we know and have tasted their food. So this was a delightful experience, Leslie.
And delightful for me.
It was almost as good as going back to Ireland, but not nearly.
I know it.
What I'm going to do is let you explain what's in this book, because there are a lot of things in this book. How did you select these chefs, for example?
Well, over several years, I've been traveling to Ireland on research trips for books that I've done on Irish cultural history. And so I've had a chance to dine in many cities, towns, villages in Ireland. And over the years I've been working with Tourism Ireland, they've been a great asset, a great help in introducing me to people to help with research and such. And over the course of several years I met some wonderful chefs, and I thought, well, let's see what we can do here. I started at I had a wonderful several day stay at Ballymaloe.
Oh yeah,
in Cork. Doreen,
we've interviewed her a number of times. We've been to Ballymaloe. Yeah,
it is gorgeous. Well, as you know, Doreena had been the chef there, and then she started the Ballymaloe Cookery School just up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I thought, oh my goodness. And I was there doing research for another book. But I thought, oh, this is a treat. And I'm sure perhaps Ruth Moran from Tourism Ireland in New York knew what she was doing because we shared several lovely meals in New York, but maybe she realized how much I loved food. So from there, I then met Kevin Dundon from Dunbrody House in Wexford.
Right.
And had some lovely meals and stayed there and had some lovely meals there. And then a few more. Then I met Martin Beelan, who's from a lovely restaurant, Global Village in Kerry. And he came to New York for a Tourism Ireland event, and he cooked the meal. And so I was able to speak with him after that, and you know, it was wonderful. And again, the conversations began to be all about fresh, local,
fabulous food. This is like the outstanding thing, which began to be more publicized. I remember writing my first article on the New Irish cuisine in the 90s. Interviewing, there was a wonderful Irish food writer in Washington, D.C., who started talking about how everything was so pristine, ingredients in Ireland, and that basically Irish chefs, although they were trained in Ireland, traveled extensively and brought back the concepts of new cuisine. And that was the state at then. But it's gotten even more so, I think.
Yes, it has. And it's you know, the country itself has fantastic weather. It rains a lot, but it's sunny just as often, and it's warmed. You know, you'd think it would be very cold and horrible up there, right on the
right near, you know, right on the same level as Newfoundland. You'd expect it to just be icy. So, and it's not that case at all, as you know. It's the Gulf Stream runs along the west coast, so it warms it. So these, certainly all the animals and the flowers are out, you know, more than 300 days a year, grazing on this natural, sweet, flower-based, flower-studded, rather, grass, which makes everything sweet. So that is lovely. Then, obviously, the ocean surrounding the island contributes wonderful things.
Oh, yes.
And then the rivers and lakes. I mean, it has everything. It has everything right there.
And, now, you organized this by provinces and the counties.
I did. I organized it by province. I thought I wanted to show the breadth of this new food, and I thought there was a way to do it. So I thought, okay, I started in Dublin, actually.
Yes, where we started too. Yeah.
And I started working down the coast and thought, well, wait a minute, I don't want to do it by. Let's back up a second. You know, there are only so many pages you can put in a book
right. That
can sell at a decent price. So we couldn't put everything in there. So I thought, well, the obvious way then would be to do, there are four, so we put in the, you know, Leinster, Munster, Carnarvon, and Ulster, thinking that would cover us. And it basically did.
Yeah, and then
otherwise we'd put it by county, and I think we'd still be counting.
Right, and yeah, you know, there's so many counties. But you invited these chefs, and you have the profiles,
yes.
The bios of these chefs,
yes.
Right at the front of the book.
Yes.
And so, as I said, they're like my old friends looking down this list, which
is
great.
Oh, I bet. Oh, how nice.
Yeah, and you invited each chef to submit what?
After speaking with Ruth Moran from Tourism Ireland, I said, you know, it's really time to do a book and show this, you know, with all of these guys. And I've met certainly most of them. Now I've met all of them by phone and email and all of that, but I had met and had meals from many of them. So with Tourism Ireland's blessing, I did ask each of the chefs, would they contribute something? And I said, I wanted to get the idea of a meal, and not of a menu, not just the food. So I asked if they would contribute. We started out with a couple of dishes for lunch, and then two. Well, I asked actually originally for three courses for dinners, and we just didn't have enough room for that. So we ended up with, I believe, each one has done two lunches. And then two dinners of three courses each, and then some of them very nicely tucked in a tea,
right?
Which was great.
Now you have full color pictures of just about everything. Mm-hmm. The photography's really extravagant. I mean,
it is extravagant. It was very extravagant. I used photographers. The two main photographers are Chris Hill and. Karsten Krieger, with whom I've worked on previous books, so I know them. I know Chris very well. We've done, 4 or 5 books together, and I met Karsten to do the last book, Ireland, a Luminous Beauty. I'd seen his beautiful, beautiful work. So anyway, so those two gentlemen, those two photographers, were the ones that we used. And as I say, I know them well enough, and I had the menus and the recipes so we could plan. Unfortunately, I was not there for the photography shooting.
Uh-huh.
There really wasn't a budget for it at all.
Oh, dear. That's
so
bad.
I thought I'd rather put that money into paying them to do it, because
right.
I knew they would do a fabulous job. So we had lots of conversations.
Yeah, well, you have, landscape photos. You have the food. You have the people. You have landmarks such as the English Market in Cork.
Yes.
You also have an emphasis on the other thing that has become very true of Ireland is the artisanal producers in Ireland.
Well, yes, and that's become more and more. Well, we've become more and more aware of it, but I think there are more and more of them as well. I mean, I think I said in the introduction, it's real. This is really a team because mm-hmm. it's the wonderful wear, if you would have, of the earth itself, and then the chefs work so well with them. I mean, Darina Allen is incredible with what she works. She has several of the artisanal producers working producing things just for her.
Oh yes.
I mean, now they spread it out and do it for others. But she would work with them just amazing. Here we at her suggestion. There's a Gabin farm in County Cork, not far from Ballymaloe, and Darina had provided us the recipe for a warm salad of Gabin bacon with poached egg.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. Well, turn to the next spread, because she had said she had gotten this bacon right from there, and said, you know, if you can't get that, you know, why not try? But try for the best quality that you can find. So I contacted them, and they were wonderful. They have, not only do they do their the cured meats, but then they do all their own vegetables, and then they've got the cows and stuff. So there's that image along the bottom where we show the plants to the grass, to the milk, to the cheese, to the bacon and the tomatoes. Eggs. It's quite wonderful. They're all very, very aware of the food and where it is coming from. I laughed with the ice cream makers. You know, they could practically name the cow, you know,
yes.
the milk came from. And then I love, there's a picture of one of the brothers is out in the ocean. Well, he's not too far. He's right on the shore, but he's gathering salt water for them to make their ice cream. So I thought, doesn't get much better than that.
No, it's just the and it's small enough as a country that you can get things from coast to coast.
Yes.
I forget how, when we were in Dublin, how long were the lobsters out of the water? Not very long.
Oh, I know it. At Ballymaloe again, I remember being there once. It was for one dinner, and it was the last day of the wild salmon, and we sat at the table, and I was lucky enough, they invited me to sit with the family. We sat there, and Myrtle leaned over, and she said, well, we have to wait a bit. The boats were a little, I guess the seams had been a little rough. So we sat, and we waited and talked, and I could see out the window, you know, for that long drive,
yeah.
And I saw this truck racing up, and I just laughed. I said, I think it's arriving. So not 5 minutes later, it was on our plate.
Oh, that's really amazing.
It was wonderful.
It's like when we're in London recently at a restaurant called Wild Honey, and the rabbits arrived. the rabbits to be served for lunch arrived while we were sitting there. We had started our lunch already.
That's fresh food.
But we got some rabbit before it's over.
Now, where was it that we went at the uppermost northern tip? What was the restaurant?
Oh, Donegal?
Yes. The restaurant is called Harry's Bar.
Harry's Bar.
And the operator was the son of the founder, Harry, and he claimed, and rightly so, I think, that almost all the produce that was served in his restaurant came from the five different places where he was growing around the Inishowen Peninsula, which is just about miles west of Londonderry.
Yeah. I know. Well, that's what they're all, and the young chefs up there, Ian Orr and Noel McNeil. Do you know them? Have you met them?
We don't know them. We were in, it's so funny, the story of Dan. We were in Galway,
mm-hmm.
where we found, incidentally, an excellent sushi restaurant.
Oh, yeah. sushi in the sky.
Well, now that would be fresh.
But that's a story for another day. But
okay.
But the people we were visiting with said, you have to talk to Dan. You can't leave before you meet this man. And it only involved driving about 250 miles out of the way we were going.
On treacherous roads.
but we did it anyway, and it was a wonderful experience. And we've kind of lost touch with him, but he was actually going to try to put a true fine dining restaurant in Londonderry, and we don't know whether he ever succeeded in doing that.
I think he did.
What was the name again?
Well, the name of the restaurant that he had at that time was Harry's Bar.
Oh, okay, yeah.
No connection at all with Harry's Bar in Venice.
I guess not. What's interesting that is a young chef, Ian Orr,
yes,
who is in Londonderry. He started with just the one in Londonderry, and now he has several restaurants. But Brown's won. When I met him, he had just won the best chef in Northern Ireland. Here it is in Derry, Londonderry, named best restaurant in Ulster in 2013 and again in 2016.
Wow.
And best restaurant in Northern Ireland in 2016.
It's only going to keep on getting better. You're going to have to do another version of this book.
Oh, gee, I can't imagine. I would love it.
Because everything is still growing, still changing, still improving.
Mm-hmm.
And every reason, I suppose, that will continue.
Oh, I'm sure it will. And, excuse me, what I really hope is that people will realize that, yes, these are all the marvelous fresh ingredients here, but we have wonderful ingredients too. We have access to them, and what I hope they can do is learn to treat them gently, prepare them in the same way. I think it's also they are so aware. The chefs in Ireland are so aware of where their ingredients are grown or where they're sourced. As you've probably noticed in the restaurants now, they tell you, where it is. This is from Five Mile Town Creamery in County Tyrone.
But they do that here, too.
Yeah.
One of our favorite Irish chefs, actually, is Trevor Moran, and he's in Nashville.
Well, lucky Nashville.
Yeah. but they're all over.
Yeah.
Yes.
He worked for a long time with Rene Redzepi at NoMA.
Yeah, there's a great Irish chef in London called Corrigan, Richard Corrigan.
Oh, Richard Corrigan, yes.
Some of the chefs have been exported, but a lot of them are happy to stay home and pleased to see you when you show up.
Oh, yes, I know. Yes, but a lot of these chefs have gone off to the various places in the world and then come back.
That's what Anne told me when I was doing this article, for Breakfast Food Magazine at the time. Yeah. The thing about the ingredients, I think, is that the appreciation for them has also in a timely fashion hit. Like it has every place. It's like all over the world, this emphasis on ingredients. And they just happen to have a really good larder, I think.
They sure do. I know it. I know it. And I'm so delighted that they're now known for, Ireland is a great food destination.
It sure is. It is. And you get the scenery, too. You get the culture there. And you get all those wonderful stories that all the chefs that tell. And all the interviews we had, we have all these great stories. And, I mean, you look at the Allen family with the daughters-in-laws. I think
I know.
We interviewed Myrtle. We interviewed Dorina. And I just read something about the third daughter-in-law, the television personality.
It's
wonderful.
Rachel,
right.
And then there's one, now I've forgotten her name. I swore I wouldn't because I was there and witnessed to a absolutely stunningly beautiful moment. The daughter who, actually I think she was handling the shop that's on the grounds right there. It just has sort of local things, and she just managed that. I think all the others had sort of wandered off and done their own thing, and she just stayed there. And she was a lovely,
lovely woman, quiet woman. And,
well, they're all wonderful, aren't they?
They are. They are.
All those years we never went even though we were in the UK forever, you know, for all the time because of Peter's family. And once exposed, we went bang, bang, bang 3 years in a row.
Oh, I know it. Oh,
I mean, we keep on wishing we could find time to go back there again. And
yes.
You've inspired us, so I guess.
Oh, good.
Good.
I guess we'll probably have to do that.
I love these. Listeners, you're going to love these recipes. Potato, prawn, and lime soup. I mean, there's so many different things I could point out for this. Just get the book. You'll love the photography. You'll love the recipes, the stories. It's a great publication here, Leslie, and I wish you much success with the book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I do, too. And may we all sit down to a wonderful meal soon.
Right.
Now, you must let me know when you're going to go to Ireland.
So you're going to meet up with us?
I'll meet up with you, and we'll have dinner.
Oh, great. Okay.
That would be fun.
Yeah, we'll share contacts.
Listeners, there you have it on the Menu Radio for another week. We hope you'll join us again, same time, same place next week. And until then,
bye-bye.